I knew that was I was out of school. I graduated from high school in 26. By the way, we'll have our 60th reunion.
That's right.
September the 5th. There were two of us working 10 years ago, the 50th. Of course, I'm still working yet. I imagine the other man isn't, maybe yet. But the men are mostly gone. All my boyhood friends in the high school are gone at the 50th, the ones I really knew well. So I did not know these people socially in the usual sense, because I did not live in Jackson in a home to go to social events. And a country, poor country boy, I much went back and forth from home. I worked, decided I would, well, I looked for a job. When I got through high school, I thought maybe I'd be an apprentice. I went to the Chamber of Commerce. Now, this is one of the things in Jackson. I went to the Chamber of Commerce, which we walked by on the way to high school. And I went in to see the secretary or whatever, the executive anyway. He said, oh, why don't you be a toolmaker? So I said, well, how? And I went to the shop, he interviewed, and they had no openings for toolmakers, so I didn't get it. Well, why don't you be an auto mechanic? There's a school in Detroit, and so I went to see in Detroit, and it had cost quite a bit of money, and I didn't have any. So, and I had worked in the shop in the summer between my 11th and 12th grades in Morrison Stamping Company. It was a division of Hayes Wheel Company, and it was a large machine shop. We made disc wheels, brake drums, things of this kind. I worked there in the summer of 1925. Then I got a job there, and when I was through high school, shortly after I was out, I got a job there starting probably by the 1st of July 1926, when I graduated. Now, you see, I was older. I was going to be 19 when I finished high school, that's August. And so I worked there, but I got laid off during the year. But I began to have the opportunity to run these big machines, to feed them the plates, and I ran a blanker to make brake drum blanks, and I ran a press to make the drums. I ran a disc wheel trimmer. I ran the trimmer, I guess, on the disc wheels. Or maybe it was the former. Anyway, I got to run these big machines. It turned out to be a very noisy shop. I attribute that to my loss of hearing starting at age 55. Although part of it's hereditary, I know, because my son, who's now 50, is feeling the need to get hearing aids almost. So I'm not real sure. Mm-hmm. But I worked there, but I got laid off some and on. And my stepfather worked there, too. My brother had worked there, but he went back to the railroad as an engineer. And I worked in helping my stepfather shingle a barn or put on a roof or something to do some. I did some graveling road when I was out of work just before school started. I went to see Mr. Bliss, the principal of the high school, about going to Michigan State. Now, I had never visited either. I had never visited Ann Arbor, 28 miles away. I'd never visited it. I'd been through it twice on a streetcar. But you see, that's Washtenaw County, and in those days, we didn't have an automobile until 1920, and there's 26, you see, and we looked to Jackson, as part of the county. And I went to see Mr. Bliss, and Mr. Bliss was an elderly man with a master's degree, I believe, from the University of Michigan. And I said, I want to get a recommendation to Michigan State. And he visited with me a little, and he said, why Michigan State? Why don't you go to the university? You're closer. And I said, well, I just don't know anything about it. And he said, well, I'll tell you, I don't either, but I'm willing to bet my last dollar that it's much better at Ann Arbor than at Michigan State. And, of course, he was so right. It turned out that we were the second or third school of chemical engineering in the United States, pushing MIT for the... Well, there were three schools at that time that had 90% of the doctorates. Mm. Ann Arbor was one of them. Mm. I went there. I had $700, $600 in the bank, and $100 I had loaned my brother when he bought his house. And I had a cousin, my father's oldest sister's son, who was a school teacher, and he had been there getting his master's degree in education in Ann Arbor. And he'd been working in a restaurant, noons, and he had worked at a civil engineer's office, Mr. Atwell. And I said, well, get him those jobs for me if you can. So he did. So I went to work in a restaurant the first day I went to school there, from 11:30 till 1:30. We got $1 a day and our lunch. I went to the civil engineering office, and some other boy had come and said he was the man. And I had to wait a week, but finally I got straightened around that I got the job, and I got 50 cents an hour for 4 hours, once or twice a week. So I made, $10, $11, working noons and two afternoons a week. And so the first year it cost me $300 out of my savings. I had a room that I paid $4 or $3.50 for, and I, of course, had a lunch there, and then I had to buy a dinner, books, tuition. The next summer of 27 when I went to school. 28, I worked at the Chelsea Screw Plant. My folks had lived in Chelsea, which is a village, not 10, 11 miles from our farm. My stepfather was working the screw plant. My brother was working the farm. He had married in the meantime and was working the farm. So they were living in Chelsea in a home. And I'd go there weekends from Ann Arbor. But I got this job, a week in summer and spring vacation, and then summer. We worked 65 hours a week, five nights of 13 hours each. I ran three automatic screw machines. And the three screw machines were noisy, of course, again, but they were make you go to sleep. I said, I'm working for nothing. You just pay me to keep awake. 4 o'clock in the morning. But it was a nice experience. It was warm. We had, our meals took us with us, and my stepfather ran screw machines, too. So I learned to grind drills and grind taps and things of this kind, and to run screw machines. And I saved back, I guess, my $300, so I was back to $600. And I went my sophomore year, and I decided to go summers thereafter. So I went the summer of 29, and I took, it was the summer of 30 that I took physical chemistry. I took physical chemistry laboratory from Professor Lee Case. I was the only student taking the course, and he personally described each experiment to me on the board. And I liked physical chemistry very much. I had taken my general chemistry, Professor Hodges. I had Professor Roy McAlpine, for my qualitative analysis. And my Professor Meloche, I guess it was, for my quantitative one semester. I got a job my junior year there in chemistry as Professor McAlpine's assistant in the lab, qualitative analysis. I had some nice little experiences. One of the experiences later on, I assume you want these things?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Right, little experiences. I was making up Saturday afternoon on the fourth floor in a little unknown room. I was making up the dry samples for qual. And as I was sitting there making the record in my book, I heard a box up on the shelf go psping, Oh my, what did I put in there? I looked, and it was ammonium nitrate and zinc dust. I went to the lab the next week, and I could put zinc dust and ammonium nitrate and mix them up and shake them together and let it sit in the sink, and within 2 to 5 minutes they would ignite. And this is a little side issue on story, later on, I saw the first ammonium nitrate plant in North, making ammonia from natural gas out of Calgary. And they had two rules. One was never bring organic material into the plant. even in the paints, they were careful. Never allow anything to go above 250 centigrade. And of course, I was familiar with the Texas City disaster with the ammonium nitrate, the flour and the paper sacks aboard, and the fire on the ships, so that I had some understanding of what happens when ammonium nitrate and other things get together. Well, I went on in my going summers as well as the year, and the fall of 29, I got from my math teacher, he had gotten me a $100 scholarship. Gemmell, I guess it was, scholarship, and handed it to me at the end of the summer session. And I said, well, that's fine, what'll I do? And I said, well, I've never been out of the state. I had a friend who had been out in North Dakota, and I went to see him whether he'd go with me, but no, he couldn't. But I bought a Model T Ford, $40, paid $5 to my friend in Waterloo to grind the valves and get it ready. That was a touring car. And when my summer school was out, I got in the car and drove to North Dakota. Worked in the harvest fields a few days at $5 a day, you know, for 13 hours. And it was 105 out there, and I got sick with the water. The water was muddy in the jug. I slept in the barn between Bismarck and Minot, North Dakota. So I started back on Highway 2 with my Model T. I had, I don't know, several flat tires, not very good tires. All gravel road, excepting a mile ahead and a mile after any city. And but I made the 3,000-mile trip with 105 gallons of gas, you know, where you could turn the carburetor down. And I slept on the farm. Go by a farm in Iowa. I'd stay park off the road. I had a horse blanket and my bread box for my vittles and shaving material. And I got back to northern Michigan, and I knew my folks were, they knew I was coming back, and they were up in the northern peninsula, and we met, but I didn't see them, but they saw me, and we turned around. I was coming back from the locks, Sault Ste. Marie. We went around to Hancock with my folks then, and came back across the straits. It was so, with the ferry, my Model T, the emergency brake didn't work very well, and it was so rough on the ferry that I had to sit in my car to keep the car from rolling into a valve and ruining my radiator. But I got home and went on. I knew by my junior year that I was going to go and get a doctorate degree. It had outlined what you had to do, and I was gearing my languages. I took 3 semesters of German, and I figured that would be enough to pass the exam, so I took my 4th language semester of French. I took a year of French. And I took my qualifying exams early, so that, and I took, of course, extra hours in the summer, so that I completed my bachelor's degree. I didn't get my degree until June, but I really finished the hours by January of 1931. January of 31. By June, of course, I officially had my degree, and by August of 31, I had finished all of my requirements for the doctorate. I took my languages, I had my 21-day problem, and they had qualifying exams. I took those and passed them, and I had become Brown's assistant in January 1930. While I'm in my sophomore year, the restaurant where I worked said they needed a man or boy to stay in the evening as well. So I started working from 5:15 until 7:30 evenings, and I got my dinner and a total of $10 and later $12 a week. The restaurant changed hands about the time. The end of my 3rd year there, and the other man raised my wages to $12, and I closed the place many times. I was responsible for locking up and handling it the last two hours of the evening. So I was doing very well financially. I gave up my cleaning job at the end of 2 years because I was in chemistry. Then I became an assistant to Brown, earned as much as $500 in a year, both in the lab and as grading assistant and as consulting assistant. He had a lot of cases, but one of them was a big case, the root refining case with Universal Oil Products. And excuse me. I guess we'll let it go.
Okay. Make
sure. I think my wife will go.
Okay. You just have to disconnect.
I became Brown's consulting assistant, and we had a lot of phase behavior. In the meantime, I had taken my doctor's degree problem on phase behavior, predicting, calculating vapor liquid equilibrium. Now, Brown and I did not understand the material balance trial and error concept that you have to use. And I thought I could find a way of avoiding the trial and error. And I was using light hydrocarbons. I ran Pod Bielniak's column in our same lab. I was the assistant. I was familiar with a fellow named Professor Good, who'd worked with Professor Leslie on vapor liquid equilibria at oil temperatures. But I came in charge. I was in charge of the lab. I also ran distillations, made a 1 2-liter column and a 6-foot-high column, and ran distillations. I helped Roy Wilson. Roy Wilson was getting his doctor's degree with Brown, and Brown had gotten the Union Oil to take a vapor and liquid sample off a fractionator, a crude distillation fractionator, so that Roy had a liquid for the vapor and a liquid for the liquid on a plate, and I ran the distillations. I work all night sometimes, you know, have an alarm clock to wake me up to take the sample off. I imagine we ran 2 liters, but I'm not sure if it was two. At least, yeah, it must have been 2 liters. And I devised the molecular weight apparatus to run the molecular weights, and I ran the density, of course, of the fractions. And ran distillation. I don't know how many I ran, but he must have had 30 samples, and Roy ran some, but I ran probably 15 or 20 of them, and I actually helped make the column itself with a physics glass blower. I also had, for example, Brown brought in a sample of material that was sent to him from East Texas. It was a oxygenated material. We had a copper condenser on our fractionating column, and we ran the distillation on that, and we got continuously 2 layers of liquid condensate, and one of them was blue. And we never quite knew what it was, but it was an oxygenated propane or butane from East Texas. So I enjoyed the lab, and I enjoyed this with Brown, and I gradually became his chief of graduate student. I had 14 people working with me at one time. Brown was at MIT working with W.K. Lewis and other people there. And one afternoon, he knew I was at the restaurant, you know, from 5 till 7:30 at night, so he talked to me during the day and through his office, and I spent a 45 minutes on a phone call as a student, which was quite impressive to me. But what finally turned out was that they ran on a Dubbs cracking unit and a crude distillation unit where the two streams were combined going to a separator at 900 degrees Fahrenheit and 500 pounds. They gathered the vapor and liquid samples. They gathered the sample of the crude oil and of the cracking stock. No, they couldn't do that. They just did the sample from the separator. But I had the crude oil, I guess, sample by itself before it was fractionated, before it was heated. In any event, for my thesis, I put in the vapor liquid equilibria and the equilibrium constants for had developed in my thesis. So I ran the vapor liquid equilibria, and the issue was how much of the bottoms came from the cracking was taken out and how much from the crude oil. Well, we devised this material balance concept that if you take 30 parts of crude oil and 70 parts of cracking stock, you keep them separate. You call this one the sum of the total is 30, the sum of the other one is 70, and you keep them separate. You can follow each constituent into the flash vaporization separation. So I could tell them exactly how much came from each of the two streams. And he used that in the suit. And I put it in my thesis. Of course, I did other things for my thesis, too. And I finished my thesis in May of 1933.
What were the other things that you did?
Well, I got Balky and Kay's material that they had run a phase behavior on at Standard of Indiana. And I had one of the Sidney Young type columns, where I could, you know, with mercury displacement, and they had one in the lab, and I got it, hooked it up, and tried to run some data on that to match what they had run. I made vapor liquid calculations of natural gas material. We had to guess if the K's were for the vapor liquid, Y over X equal to equilibrium constant. Brown and Sodders were working on the fugacity concept, and they had come up, Brown, Sodders, and Smith, I believe it was. They came up with a paper in 1932. In any event, I made equilibrium constant charts for boiling points of fairly high, and I extrapolated out to 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit boiling point. I ran distillation down to 0.6 of a millimeter, and let's see, 760. Must have been around, I'm uncertain at the moment, but very low, maybe 4 millimeters of vapor pressure or something, 10 millimeters or something like that, instead of the 760. We went very low pressure. So I worked on the vapor pressure chart. Hal Coates had taken his doctor's degree with Brown on the vapor pressure chart. And so I extended, worked on it, and found some new data in the literature. One of the things that was very important to me is I started reading the literature of phase behavior, and I found Sidney Young's articles, or Brown had probably showed them to me, for the PBT properties of iso and normal pentane that Sidney Young had run. Well, I found the PVT properties for hexane vapor in the superheat region, and I added that, and we ran a compressibility factor chart, too, on my doctor's thesis. So I looked at the pressure volume temperature. I looked at the phase behavior of these pure substances and read a goodly number of Sidney Young's papers. Very much impressed. I went back, and I think I found his thesis. There was another person in German who had a method. I went back to read his early work in German, too. So our paper was published in December 1933. Brown had given it at a meeting or something, and he published, and the paper was published, Vapor Pressure and Vaporization of Petroleum Fractions.
If I might interrupt, I have some questions. If I could back up a little bit.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, it's really great. But before we leave Michigan for Oklahoma, I want to back up and ask some other things.
Okay.
There was an interim period before you went to Michigan that you weren't in school. Were you still doing a lot of reading at that time?
Yes. I went to Jackson, but there was only novels and things, not science.
You weren't reading any?
No, science, okay. No. I guess I didn't do much reading when I was working, because I was working, you know, we drove back and forth to Jackson. I had to go to get there at 6:30 in the morning and work till 5 at night. You were in a 10-hour days, those days. You see, I think we were. Yeah, 6:30 to 5. Is that 10 hours? No. Half hour for lunch?
Mm-hmm.
Seems like we were. Anyway, I did not do much reading, and I was discontented. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I had a good incentive to go to college. I was running a big press that made the Chrysler 14-inch brake drums. Mm-hmm. It was so big, and I had to dip the steel discs in dope, they called it. It was an oil-water mix or a lubricant, and I had to, they only raised the plunger, you know, about 2 inches, and I had to get that in there just right. If I missed it, they had to stop the machine, and it took them, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes to stop the machine and reverse it, and then they'd have to grind the dies again, the foreman would. So I was very careful, but I was running that machine, and one day it had just scored so that they had to stop it anyway.
Coffee.
Would you, excuse me, would
coffee
you?
Time?
No, thank you.
We'll pass then, honey.
Go ahead if you want.
Donald?
Yes, I guess I would.
How about your guest?
No,
no.
I don't
okay.
drink coffee, thank
okay.
you.
Would you like some anything to drink?
If there were tea, that would be...
Tea. He'll have some tea, honey.
Oh, dear. Honey, I don't know where it is.
All right,
I'll get it.
No, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I'll get it, right? Where was I?
You were talking about the machine you were working on.
Oh, yes. And this is my incentive to go. We had a wonderful assistant superintendent of the shop I was working in. His name was... Pop, P-O-P-P. He was my friend. He gave me breaks in the running of machines and doing jobs. For example, my stepfather was the shipping agent. And in the summer of 1927, when my stepfather was on vacation, he said, "Well, you run, you take his job." And I shipped, you know, put the stuff in the freight cars and had to make the records of what was being shipped and sealed the cars up, and he really was my friend. Well, the superintendent, though, was not. He was very stern. I was running the machine, and it was being honed down, and I sat down on a bench by my machine, and he came up to me, and he said, "What are you sitting down for?" And I said, "Well, I've just been handling about 20 ton of steel and nothing I can do. I'm just waiting for the foreman to clean the scene." He said, "You can't sit down in my shop." I said that was very good incentive to go to college. But I did want to learn, and it took a little bit when I went to college because I'd been out a year. And I was 20 when I entered college.
How did you select the chemistry and chemical engineering were combined at that time?
They were separate. Chemical engineering had moved into the East Engineering Building in 1923. Prior to that time, they were together in the chemistry building.
Okay.
But chemistry was closely allied with chemical engineering, and you see, many of the chemistry people had taken chem engineering as undergraduates. Then they take their doctors in chemistry. So I got to know the chemistry people very well.
But how did you select that as your major when you entered?
Well, it came about that this scholarship, you see, I wasn't clear on it, but this ACS scholarship was, I believe it was in chemical engineering. At least Michigan State emphasized the chemical engineering over the chemistry. So I just said chem engineering, but I didn't really know the difference until I got there.
Mm-hmm.
We had a freshman week for the first time at the university. Professor Little, Dr. Little, was our president at Ann Arbor at that time. And we had a whole week of introduction to the university, and it was fine. And I had Professor Upthegrove as a mentor. He was a metallurgical person. But I had to struggle pretty hard, but I had the time. I only worked noons and two afternoons a week. And I carried on, and I got good grades, excepting my English always got these. And things went along well. In my sophomore year, I was taking 20 hours in my sophomore year and working, and then I got the evening job as well as the noon job, and that second semester I got my several B's as well as a couple of A's, but I never got any C's in college. But this was my hardest time. I was taking physics